Stevenson. We're here today for a public hearing and wood work session on a federal grant application request from OWEB for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Program. And I will turn it over to Mr. Rocco from Legislative Fiscal to do the presentation for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board has brought forward a request for permission to apply for a $9 million federal funds grant from the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. And this is in regards to the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Program. If you'll recall, when the agency was here for their budget presentation, they discussed the $9 million of federal funds that was going to be part of their budget for the 0103 biennium. And this is the vehicle that they need to actually go and apply for that federal money. And attached to the request, there's an analysis by Legislative Fiscal, which is recommending approval of the request, and analysis by the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management.
Questions or comments from the committee?
And Mr. Huntington's here to answer any questions about this particular grant from OWEB.
But he's indicating that he doesn't really want to come up and talk.
In that case, Madam Chair, I think you should make him come up and talk.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dukes.
Good question. We've had a number of internal discussions about the $9 million. At least I think this is the same money. Have we resolved those differences of opinion between legislative leadership and OWEB as to how this money can be spent?
My understanding is that this is a different issue from the $9 million.
Oh, it's a new $9 million?
No. Perhaps you better take over.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, I believe there's discussion still going on as to the extent of the various uses of this money. In the first $9 million appropriation from Congress has already been identified for use by OWEB in certain ways, and that was part of the budget discussion that we've had. And this is basically the second installment of what was intended to be a three-year kind of program. And there have been discussions about how that money can be used for state agency use and for other kinds of use for salmon recovery efforts. And those are, I don't believe they have been resolved yet, but I understand there are ongoing discussions.
Madam Chair, let me maybe explain my interest in all of this. I'm a big supporter of OWEB, and I think that they have exercised great restraint and caution and judiciousness in making their grants thus far. However, suddenly a lot of money is coming to that agency from the federal government, not to mention the fact that with lottery money is going up, they're getting a fair amount of state money, in more than they've had before. And I have a concern that at some point, in spite of how good a board we have, we're going to get to the point where there's enough money to start doing projects that we normally wouldn't have done. And so I am concerned about, this is the second $9 million, which means from that particular source, we're into $18 million. I'm concerned about spending this much money in grant form without some legislative oversight. And I think that those discussions that we've had up to this point would, if they go in one direction, would have given us more of that oversight. I can fully understand the agency not wanting to go there. I mean, if I were them, I probably wouldn't want to go there either. But nonetheless, it's no longer the kind of small dollar amounts that we had when we started the agency. This is real money. And there are a lot of uses for it out there, but I would just like to try to make sure that where we're trying to get with things is the same direction that, they're trying to get to. And again, I want to reiterate, I think they've done an excellent job. But between the feds and the state and wherever else we're getting money, there's a lot of money going to this agency.
I think your comments are very well taken, Senator Dukes. The we've had a number of discussions about the NIMS money and the lottery money and the general fund money as sources of revenue for the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. And one of the ironies of the whole situation is that the lottery funds are appearing to be a much more predictable source of revenue than the general funds are at this point. And that as we look forward in time, the money that comes through the National Marine Fisheries Association and NOAA and the lottery dollars are probably the most stable sources of funding for habitat restoration and water quality restoration work in Oregon. And the pressure on use of general fund dollars for education and social services and public safety is only going to continue to increase. And as we appear to be going into an economic cycle where general fund dollars, the flow is slowing down in terms of growth over what it has been. And I agree with you that as the NOAA money and the lottery funds become the preeminent funding for this, that it behooves this body to keep an eye on how that's spent.
How do we do that?
Pass a law.
Oh. Okay.
Any further comments? Representative Krieger.
Chair Morgan, Saturday we were up at the Pacific Fisheries Legislative Task Force Olympia, and the counterpart of the Oregon Water Enhancement Board, I don't know what they call it up there. Surf Board, that's right. At any rate, they had a presentation. I was looking at the federal dollars that's being infused into Washington. It's even more than it is here in Oregon. Their distribution is through grants, but different than it is in Oregon. I don't totally understand how they're doing it, but as dollars increase, I feel that OWEB, having been there and worked with them, the new policy they've developed, the goals, those types of things, their objectives, the way the grants are looked at and the review committees that they've got in place, I think help safeguard that. I just think that they've got to be made well aware that there is concern as these dollars grow. They continue to be good stewards of those dollars like they have in the past. And like you say, how you go about ensuring that. We have a reluctance sometimes to take people's, say what we're going to do as we always have, but I'm not certain how we do that without intruding into it and making it very complicated and difficult.
Further comments? The chair will accept a motion to recommend approval of the OWEB grant request to the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Program.
So moved.
Oh, we better go into work session. We'll close the public hearing, enter the work session.
So moved.
Done.
Representative Krieger? Representative Lowe?
So moved.
So moved. We have a motion on the table to approve the grant request for OWEB to the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Program. Are there any objections?
Madam Chair, before we do that, can I ask a question, mm-hmm. Mr. Huntington?
Good afternoon, Mr. Huntington.
Good afternoon.
What, if any, role do you see for the legislature as you make decisions on spending this money?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, Jeff Huntington, the Director of Watershed Enhancement Board. In the last biennium, we had budget notes that we fulfilled that required us to report I believe, on a quarterly basis to the Substantive Salmon Committee, and on a, I believe, on a quarterly basis also to Legislative Fiscal Staff and the, and BAM, that we identified every dollar that had been spent based on the federal funds and the other fund sources. And so we itemized by grant where the money had gone, and what category of funds had been relied on to do that, and summarized anything that had been happening on rules or policies. We also produced a spending plan for that $9 million, so that in advance of the expenditures, the emergency board was provided with a fairly detailed breakout of categories and the way we anticipated spending the $9 million. So literally, since we were working through the emergency board, because the last installment of the $9 million came in after the legislative session, we identified through our limitation the constraints on where the money would be spent and how, so it could be reviewed at the time I received the authority to do the expenditures. So we both talked about it before we received the limitation authority, and then in a reporting function on a quarterly basis to substantive oversight committees and legislative fiscal staff and the emergency board on occasion.
Okay, just so you know, one of the areas that I get particularly interested in, I know a number of other members do as well, as you're required in the statutes to deal with education, and that's a good thing for you to do. I suppose it wasn't OEB then, it was GWEB that was doing some really interesting, or proposing to fund some really interesting educational opportunities. I remember Susie Salmon, Sally Salmon, maybe it was Sally Salmon. And things that seemed as though they were saying we have money and we should spend this money and we're supposed to do education, so we'll call this education. And there is controversy between one group's educational plan and another group's educational plan. And so I think it would be helpful if we could become partners in some of this.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, I agree with you, and I view this body as a partner. And I thought that the reporting requirements were a very good thing for me to spend that time on a routine basis with a substantive committee and with the emergency board as well. And I don't have any objections to that. I think I'd much prefer to talk about things in advance as we move through, because we are growing, and we're growing fast. And I'm not just talking about OEB. I'm talking about the Oregon plan and how we're framing it and moving forward with it. So I think it's behooves all of us to talk about where we're headed instead of disagreements about decisions that have already been made.
Thank you.
Further comments or questions for Mr. Huntington? Thank you. We have a motion on the floor to approve the application grant request. Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is carried. And to full committee, Senator Dukes, would you do the honors on this?
Sure.
Now I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 895 relating to ballast water management.
Representative Chair, members of the committee, the Senate Bill 895 comes to you from the Natural Resources Committee of Agriculture, Natural Resources, Agriculture, Salmon, and Water. It is a product of a work group that met during the interim that included both industry stakeholders and the Department of Environmental Quality. And it addresses ballast water management in waters of the state of Oregon. It is designed to make Oregon's law consistent with the program of the United States Coast Guard. Ballast water is water and associated sediment that is held in and discharged from a vessel to manipulate its trim and stability. Ballast is commonly exchanged as a vessel nears port and may be exchanged again as the vessel leaves after loading or unloading. Aquatic animals and plants may be passive passengers in a ballast exchange. And an aquatic nuisance species, which this bill addresses, is any species or other biologic material that enters an ecosystem beyond its historic range. Part of this bill is a task force that would continue the work of addressing ballast management issues in the state of Oregon. And Portland State University's Center for Rivers and Lakes is developing the state aquatic nuisance species management plan. That plan will also address water management issues. In your packet are the -A5 and A6 amendments. And those amendments recognize Portland State's work on aquatic nuisance species and ballast water and transfers the support of the task force the bill originally calls for from the Department of Environmental Quality to Portland State University.
Excuse me, I have only got the A5s.
The A5s, the A6, we are still waiting for the final to come from Legislative Council. It is hand engrossed on the 5 for you.
Oh, okay. So the A6 will be a printed version of the hand engrossed.
Of the hand engrossed inversion, yes.
Thank you.
It makes funding, the A6 make an A5 make funding permissive for this instead of seeking some other source of funds. And the A6 proposed amendment clarifies that we intend that funding to come from gifts, grants, or donations. PSU is planning to support the task force. They originally estimated it would cost about $77,000 to do that over the biennium. There is a federal grant they are anticipating in early 2002 that would provide funding for the task force. They have also identified necessary in-kind match from several other natural resource agencies.
Questions or comments for Ms. James?
I do have one, if that's all right. It's been a considerable amount of time of my life at Oregon State and at the U of O, where we worked a lot on marine issues. And I've also spent quite a bit of my life at PSU, where we didn't work on marine issues very much at all. This kind of surprises me that.
We have Portland State University here to testify, so we can bring them
forward
if you'd like to.
I'm sure wondering what they're going to do and why PSU is the appropriate repository for this issue. Not that I don't think they can handle it. I think they can handle it just fine. But why them?
Madam Chair.
They can tell us.
Because the foremost researcher on non-indigenous aquatic species in the entire state is at Portland State University.
It works for me. Never mind.
He's really good.
He looks like a weed.
I was just going to say, Madam Chair, this is a bill, as far as I'm concerned, didn't go far enough. There, we need to go lots further. But we couldn't get anything out last session, and so we're doing something this session, and that's progress. And I'm hope that federal grant's there, because I'd hate to see it not materialize.
So where is the blue-eyed copal pod expert?
I have signed up to testify Keith Levitt from the Port of Portland, Mark Sisma from Portland State University, and Rob Douglas. So if you would like to come up as a group or individually and talk to the committee about the bill. I too, Senator Dukes, remember the frustration last session at not being able to reach an agreement on this issue.
And it was Rob's fault.
Thank you. Keith, would you like to lead off and kind of bring us into the process of how this bill got to be here in this form?
Right. Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Keith Levitt with the Port of Portland, and it was Rob's fault last session. And, just quickly, the overview of the bill. This bill does three things. And it came through the Senate Natural Resources Committee, and I believe it was unanimous out of that committee. This is one of those bills that we've been able to get a good consensus among the environmental community as well as industry and the agencies that have been involved. The bill does three things, essentially. It creates an ocean exchange requirement for vessels that will be coming into our ports to exchange their ballast water and fill up with cargo. Those vessels would be required to have made an exchange in the ocean first before doing that, and the salinity helps protect our waterways. We do recognize, however, as Senator Dukes pointed out, that ocean exchange is really just the beginning. It's an interim solution, and what is really needed in the future and what hasn't been discovered yet is treatment technologies and standards to be in place, really at the federal level that needs to be in place, but lacking a strong federal program, at least at the state level. And that's what the task force will look into, is further technologies on ships, possibly shoreside, that would allow you to treat ballast water and not totally just rely on ocean exchange. But at a minimum, that's what this bill first and foremost does, is creates an ocean exchange requirement. Second, requires reporting. All vessels that currently enter our ports are required to submit reports to the Merchants Exchange. The steamship operators, the Merchants Exchange, and the Department of Environmental Quality worked on this part of the bill and agreed to amend those reports, essentially, and create ballast water information on those reports so that whether or not a vessel is actually subject to the exchange requirements, they still have to make ballast water reporting and say, you know, why they didn't do the exchange or why they weren't subject to that requirement. That'll be important information. That will again go to the Merchants Exchange, and they will work with the Department of Environmental Quality to get those reports 24 hours prior to the vessel actually arriving. I should say that the both the DEQ and the Merchants Exchange and the steamship operators have agreed to essentially take those costs within their existing revenues. There will be an added cost to all three of those groups, but they didn't make it much of an issue out of that because they wanted to see this bill go forward. So it took really those three groups' willingness to step forward that has made the enforcement part of this bill possible. And finally, the task force is the final piece of the bill. And again, if you look at Section 5, task force has a comprehensive amount of work really that needs to be done. And there is a lot going on the issue of invasive species. Mark will probably talk about, but also on ballast water. And the state of California just recently passed a law. State of Washington passed a law. British Columbia has a law. And there is a patchwork going on around the country, and that's really not so good. Everyone is reacting to the need to do this in the absence of a stronger federal approach. And so part of the work of the task force is to make sure we are coordinated on the West Coast with those other states and with British Columbia, but also to take a look at what Congress is doing. Next year is the reauthorization of the National Invasive Species Act, and we expect that Congress is going to step up because they are concerned, looking around at the patchwork going on around the country on this issue. So there's a lot of coordinating that needs to be done. This task force could provide that. And the amendments that you see were intended solely to release DEQ of the fiscal impact on this bill, given the fiscal constraints of this legislative session, and put PSU in that role. PSU is, and Mark can talk about their ability to do this work, but in the issue of invasive species, Dr. Sisma is really the foremost individual in the state, and they are uniquely qualified to provide this kind of technical and staffing role, subject to us helping them get the federal grant. We think we can do that. We're hopeful that if there's any other available resources this session or through other means that they're able to also accept that. But at a minimum, if they didn't get the funding, we still think the task force needs to be appointed and to do work. They just wouldn't be doing it at probably the level that we would otherwise like if they can get funding. And with that, I would urge your support of the Dash A6 amendments, I believe, that are in front of you.
Questions or comments for Mr. Levin? Mr. Sitzman, do you have anything to add?
I just mentioned to Madam Chair, Representative Lowe, members of the committee, my name is Mark Sitzma from Portland State University. I don't have blue eyes, I have brown eyes, and I'm not a copepod expert, but I'd submit that neither of those are very good criterion for invasive species management. A lot of these species are transported by common pathways, and ballast water is just one pathway. So we have weeds, crabs, copepods, benthic invertebrates, all kinds of creatures coming in ballast water. So really what the approach we've been trying to take is focus on pathways, not species, because if you focus on pathways, you solve lots of problems about species we don't even know are coming this way. Zebra mussels are one species we're very concerned about introduced in ballast water into the Great Lakes. Nobody knew they were coming until they got here, so there are a lot of species out there that are coming in ballast water. I would mention that ballast water management is just one component of a state plan that we put together. I can provide a copy to members of the committee that want to see it. There are seven tasks in this plan, and the Senate Bill 895 really addresses all seven of them in one way or another. So the plan is right now in a draft form, and the legislature has already just jumped way ahead of where we are planning to be, and so we'll have to modify the plan to take that into account. I just add, there is a lot of activity going on in ballast water. Next year, National Invasive Species Act will be reauthorized, but in the interim, there's going to be a lot of activity. I'm going to a meeting tomorrow in Oakland to discuss standards for ballast water treatment, and the state of Oregon needs to be at the table when these discussions are going on, because the Columbia River is a unique resource on the West Coast, and San Francisco Bay is world-renowned as the most invaded estuary. Puget Sound, of course, is a huge estuary. The Columbia River is different from those. And I personally think it's important that the state of Oregon and the Columbia River be represented on these kind of committees, because these are where the decision will be made that in the long term dictate what happens in the state of Oregon. So in spite of the fact that if we don't get any money to staff the task force this year, we can apply for some money next year. About this time, we should be getting some federal money under the state plan. In the meantime, though, there's a year of activity that's going to go on. And fortunately, the Coast Guard's paying my way to come to this meeting, but that doesn't always happen.
Representative Hayden has a question.
Oh, Doctor, I'm just curious. It would seem to me like what we would consider native species are really just a snapshot in time, because stands to reason that species have ebbed and flowed across the continent over the eons and transmitted by ways that you would know, maybe in Leif Erikson's vessels or migratory fowl or ocean tides. And so what we would consider native Oregon species, it's just they are at this moment. And if we didn't intervene 3,000 years from now, we would have a different set of native species. For example, Kyger Mustang was introduced by Spanish conquistadores, an invasive species, definitely invasive, but now it's sort of the native Oregon horse. So is it sort of parochial to say what we have now is the original, the perfect, and we don't want any changes?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I mean, that's a good point, but the fact is that a lot of human activities are really accelerating the introduction of organisms. So, you know, historically, organisms moved around by themselves. There were natural changes in populations. But you mentioned eons, and that's the time scale that was happening. Now, with sort of globalization of the economy, more and faster ships moving back and forth, organisms are just moving much faster. So change is happening much faster. And not all species are bad. I mean, It's about, the rule of thumb is about 10% of the species that are introduced to a region or a state or, say, the Columbia River will actually become established. So that's a relatively small percentage. Then of that 10%, about 10% of those will actually create a problem. So it's the problem species that we're worried about. And since we're accelerating the rate, we're accelerating the rate of introduction of problem species. And zebra mussels are a perfect example. Cost billions of dollars over the past 10 years to manage these species. So I don't think anybody's talked, I don't think we can stop these introductions, but we need to slow them if possible so that we can buy some time. And with the rate of globalization of the economy and increased trade, my concern is that we're introducing species much faster than ecosystems can absorb them. And with the state of our aquatic ecosystems right now, sort of tenuous, they're under a lot of stress. Introducing new species to them is just another stress put to those on those ecosystems. So I guess the point is we try and slow the introductions to some rate that's less likely to impact natural systems.
Follow up? Well, yeah, that's a good answer, and I like that. My wife is quite a gardener. She loves to garden, and invasive species that come into her domain get rooted out, and the things she likes she keeps. So are we really preserving native species, or are we really gardening and just and preserving the ones that we like, that we think complement our way of life or contribute to our economy?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I agree. I think your characterization of sort of gardening is correct. I mean, my viewpoint is we have to manage systems. We don't just walk away and assume everything's going to be okay, because we're, in fact, by not doing anything, we are doing something. Ships are coming into the Columbia River discharging ballast. That's going to happen, and we just need to manage these things a little bit carefully. I mean, aquatic systems need to be managed. They can't just sort of, you can't put a fence around something and say it's protected, because species move in and changes happen. So I think your characterization is good, and in terms of gardening, I'd call it management. We need some careful management of systems and species.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I can speak to Senator Ferrioli, I think he may want to recruit this gentleman for his forest management.
Representative Lowe had a question.
Thank you. Dr. Sitzman, have you had an opportunity to review Section 1 of the bill and its proposed definitions?
Yes.
And are you comfortable with those definitions, especially the aquatic species definition?
Madam Chair, Representative Lowe, there are a lot of definitions of invasive species out there, and I think this one is a perfectly good definition, so I'm comfortable with it.
And thank you. And one other question, if I could, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Regarding the definition of coastal exchange in A and B, and it talks about part of that definition, including latitude and longitude, or I guess latitude definitions is, would you tell me a little bit about that and why it's so broad?
Madam Chair, Representative Lowe, I think that coastal exchange definition is really the most innovative aspect of this bill. Most of the bill just sort of puts us in line with our neighboring states. But the Port of Portland's doing some studies right now that sort of look at coastal traffic, and it turns out that the Columbia River is usually a second port of call for most ships. So we have ships coming into San Francisco Bay and then coming up the coast of Portland or into the Columbia River. So that coastal trade is not covered by any federal rules or regulations. And so these coastal, like San Francisco Bay in particular, is a major threat to us. So we needed to find a way to deal with that. The reason we picked those sort of boundaries is that Point Mendocino is approximately 40 degrees north latitude. It's sort of the break of an ecoregion. So the thought is that anything that's south of there is going to spread throughout that ecoregion eventually anyway, in a fairly rapid manner. North of there, it's a different ecoregion. Similarly, north...
It's colder.
Yeah, exactly. And similarly, north of Vancouver Island is considered another ecoregion.
Even colder.
So that's the reason for
Salandi.
Those.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Douglas, you have probably a need to take this opportunity to clear your good name with the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rob Douglas representing the Columbia River Steamship Operators Association and the Maritime Fire and Safety Association. I'd just like to follow up with 2 points. The first point is, as Keith mentioned, we are bearing costs in this. We are providing the reporting, getting to the proper place so it can be disseminated. We're fully willing and able to bear that cost. We're not here today seeking any sort of reimbursement or funding for that portion of the bill. Secondly, I think the task force is to be complemented. The steamship operators and the rest of the maritime community has been working on this issue for a long time. There was a bill last session. It had some things in the bill that we thought were onerous and would be disruptive to commerce. We've been working on this issue during the interim, but if it had not been for the task force and the Port of Portland initiating the bill and bringing us to the table on this, I'm not sure we'd be here today. I'm not sure we could have gotten here completely all by ourselves. So we do appreciate the chance to participate, and we do support Senate Bill 895.
Questions or comments for Mr. Douglas? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Mr. Levitt.
Madam Chair, one last thing I wanted to just clarify on the record. I think you have a statement from the Department of Environmental Quality. It's important to be clear that if, in fact, we don't receive any funds to staff the task force, at least our intent in as we wrote the bill and the amendments was to make sure that DEQ is not obligated to produce the report to the legislature next session. The task force would have that obligation, and it would be somewhat of an ad hoc kind of report to the legislature without the staffing assistance that would otherwise come from PSU if they did not get the funding.
Representative Lowe.
Not to belabor the point, but I have another question about definitions, if I could, please. And I notice that the definition of open sea exchange doesn't include any latitude, temperature, salinity, any parameters at all, and why is that?
Madam Chair, Representative Lowe, that's basically the Coast Guard rules as they stand right now. It's copied from the current Coast Guard rules. So what we tried to do is match federal rules and regulations where we could. And basically it says 200 miles offshore and some depth requirement as well. So that's exactly what the Coast Guard rules are now.
Representative Hayden has a question.
Another definition, if you have the bill before you, Dr. Section, page 2, section 1, line 12. Is that definition the term of art used in your profession?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, there are a number, like I mentioned, there are a lot of definitions out there, and this is one way of defining aquatic nuisance species.
My question is, any species or other viable biological material that enters an ecosystem beyond its historic range. I'm way out of my range here. I did take a year of marine biology, but it was many years ago. But it would seem to me like you could have aquatic beneficial species, too, that would... Is that a possibility? Just because it comes from far away, is it a nuisance, or could it be beneficial?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, you're right. That's true. Just because it comes from far away doesn't make it a nuisance.
Is that a good definition, then, to have in the bill? Or does anybody care, or does it matter?
Well, we could, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, we could modify it and add some language that specifies.
Is there any reason to do it or not? Will that bite anybody 10 years from now?
I don't think so, Representative Hayden. I mean, most of these species that are coming in ballast water, nobody even knows what they are. I mean, it's hard to even identify them. So it's different than gardening, where you actually a macroscopic species, you can see it, and it flowers, you can identify it. These are microscopic organisms coming in ballast water that we're worried about, and cholera, pathogens, that sort of thing. So from a ballast water perspective, I think this is a good definition, because if it does, it's coming from far away, it probably is not a good thing to have introduced
to
our water systems.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions or comments? I would just like to say that working through the fiscal issues in the bill, I was very pleased with the professional and businesslike attitude that enabled us to get through these issues in a fruitful and expedited manner, and it was a good group to be working with. So thank you very much for coming forward with the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The job that we have now are to move the A6 or the hand engrossed A5s.
We're going to open the work session.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Close the public hearing, open the work session on Senate Bill 895. And what we need to do first is to move the hand engrossed A5 amendments into the bill.
Madam Chair, I move the hand engrossed A5 amendments, which would be the A6 amendments, into hand engrossed Senate Bill 895.
Discussion on the motion? Is there anyone opposed to the motion? Without opposition, the motion is passed. Now, Chair will accept a motion to move the amended version of Senate Bill 895 to full Ways and Means with the due pass.
Madam Chairman,
I would move the amended version of Senate Bill 895 to full Ways and Means of the due pass recommendation.
Discussion on the motion? Opposition to the motion? Without opposition, the motion is passed. The on the House floor, Representative Lowe, would you do the honors on this?
I would be honored.
On the Senate floor, Senator Dukes, would you do the honors? And I will deal with the bill in full.
Okay.
That completes our agenda, but I would like to have Mr. Rocco kind of fill us in on what we can expect for the rest of the week.
Madam Chair, members, tomorrow, Tuesday, we're going to have a public hearing and a work session on two federal grant application requests from the Division of State Lands. One is in regard to construction and some land acquisition at the South Slough, and the other is a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grant for salmon habitat restoration, also at the South Slough. Beyond that, we are trying to schedule some other substantive bills that have fiscal impacts into the committee later this week, and we'll keep you informed as our efforts progress.
Are there any further comments, questions? Without further business, we adjourn.